Welcome, welcome to Freaked Out with your co-hosts, Liz and Landon.
What's going on, everybody?
Hello, hello. Well, today we're going to be covering a case that will be pretty exciting, but before I get into that, I did want to talk to you guys about a little bit of some news for us. Podbean is the application that we download our podcast onto, which means that if you're following us on Podbean, you will have access to a few other things that people don't necessarily have as an option on other applications. You'll be able to actually interact with me and Landon live when we decide to go live on Podbean, and also could potentially answer live questions. You will also be able to access exclusive content, which would mean that you will receive more episodes of the podcast. So this week, for those people who are subscribing and also a patron on Podbean, will automatically have access to those exclusive episodes. So not only will I be dropping this episode today, but there will also be a second episode for those interested. So you would have to subscribe to the Podbean channel as well as being a patron subscriber, which you would pledge whatever amount that you would like to pledge. And you could continuously assist us every month, and that's going to continue to help us get out there and get more cases done. Our first exclusive content will be about the Summer Wells case and the Summer Wells family. And I'll tell you, I've already started that, and it's pretty crazy thus far. It will be a pretty wild ride, so make sure to pledge and sponsor us. You can sponsor us as little as $1 per month. I think that's a pretty good deal, especially when this particular story is pretty wild. To access this, just go and subscribe to the application Podbean, take a look, and find me there. You'll be able to also access recordings of us live, too. Looking forward to seeing you all there. Now, without any further delay, I would like to talk about Kanika Jenkins. This particular video that I posted on TikTok had over 700,000 views. The video itself was only approximately 45 seconds, so I was not able to really put as much detail as I would like to. So Kanika and I put our heads together and decided to do a very in-depth interview with her and all the details of what took place before she passed. I enjoy reading her and feel pretty bonded to her now. She wanted her story brought to you in full disclosure, so make sure that tiny humans are not around. Now, Kanika was a 19-year-old, and she was found inside of a latched freezer of the Crown Plaza Chicago O'Hare Hotel in Rosemont, Illinois, after attending a party on September 8, 2017. The medical examiner of the report found her death to be an accident, alcohol and topiramate found in her system. Although the police department did not suspect foul play, they stated that the investigation was incomplete. Jenkins' family and her friends had an overwhelming response to the lack of investigation that took place.
Here are some additional details to that. Kanika was with friends at a party that took place in a room 926 of the Crown Plaza. The party started at 11:30 p.m. on Friday, September 8, 2017. It was said that someone who knew her had arrived to the party and noticed that Jenkins appeared to be swaying back and forth as she embraced them for a hug. Others stated that she was drinking cognac, but didn't see her doing marijuana or any other drugs. Another reported she wasn't acting like her normal self. She was dancing a bit and looked sad. Others saw her briefly walking through hallways of the hotel. Camera footage later surfaced of Kanika staggering near the front desk around 3:20 a.m.
About a half an hour later, Kanika's friend contacted her mother, Teresa, who arrived at 5:30 a.m. to assist in the search for Kanika. She proceeded to knock on many guests' doors from top to bottom until the hotel employee called to complain. Of course, the call was not about Kanika, though, right? Hotel management stated that they couldn't release or provide access to the video footage from the night before until someone reported Kanika missing to the police. Now, the police took their time with this case. They checked camera footage of the entrances and exits at about 10 p.m. Police spotted footage of Jenkins dabbling through the hotel. However, her whereabouts remain unknown until she was found in the hotel freezer and pronounced dead at 12:48 a.m. Sunday. She was found laying face down on her side and one shoe off. There was no sign of trauma other than a small cut on her foot. Interesting facts about the case. The freezer, which was on and working, was described as a walk-in freezer and was also in a part of the unused kitchen. Apparently, the lights were out when she entered, which I found super strange.
Very strange.
October 6, 2017, Cook County Medical Examiner ruled her death as an accident. No illegal drugs found. Brain swelling was observed, but no association with the cause of death.
Wow, what happened at the party that you see?
Oh my gosh. Well, I see a lot of kids, ages ranging from 16 to 25, and of course trying to get away with, you know, having a party. I even feel like Kanika was even reconsidering going to the party anyway. I feel like her friend really wanted to go though, and she was not feeling well, nothing extreme or major, but just kind of off. I feel like she was pissed off at a friend that was playing games with her, so she was even more interested in getting drunker than her normal amount. She said she was having her normal dramatic female problems, nothing to be too concerned of. She was getting antsy, and I feel like she decided to take a walk. I feel like she was talking to a man and a woman before she left, but they didn't really discuss where she was heading. I see that there was a guy who was not part of the party. However, he was part of the hotel as a guest. He had approached her and was hitting on her pretty significantly. He keeps making comments about how sexy she was. I feel like he offered to give her a real party since she was clearly already intoxicated. He was a little over the top with her, but it was making her feel better. I feel like he kept on making comments like, "My friend works here and I get special access to a few places." I feel like she kept laughing and going on with him and his suggestions.
What a creep.
Definitely. I feel like he let her into his room, and I don't see the room was on the same floor as the party, but I do see that she had spent a while talking to him and the elevator area. I see that she went back to the room with him, and I see that they did drink some more. I feel like he slipped her a little something. He put on some music and a little dancing happened as well. She shows me that the roofie that he had put into her drink was similar to the symptoms of ketamine.
Interesting.
Right? She was having moments of panic. She was freaking out about her friend, kind of like venting to the guy. And I see that his face was inches away from her own face. She shows me that she kept hiding her face, not really allowing this guy as close as he wanted to be. I feel like he kept pushing, though, putting his mouth on her chest when she would tilt her head. I feel like she kept telling him that she didn't know him, and he kept pursuing it, and she giggled a lot. So she can see where he continues to get the impression, at least for the moment, anyway. She shows me that the guy's name started with an M, Mike or Marcus, particularly in that vicinity. Mike was getting frustrated with her lack of interest sexually. She remembers the two of them leaving the room to meet his friend because she was continuously getting drunker and drunker as the time progressed. I feel like the one friend was part of the hotel staff, and I feel like there was another few people floating around, but I don't necessarily understand all the details for that. She just shows me that they kept passing people by. She shows me she had a lot of people that he continuously kept introducing her to. She was also pretty drunk at this point and had a hard time remembering every little detail. I keep seeing that she was starting to feel a little woozy and needed to sit down. I also feel like this Mike guy was also getting drunker and more aggressive. I feel like he was forcing her to go back into the room, and I feel like he tried to rape her. I don't necessarily know if he was able to get it up, though. I see that he got frustrated by this and became more and more aggressive with her. I see that she continuously telling him no, and she kept closing her legs one way or another.
Some guys just don't get the hint.
Apparently not. Because he was not able to get his way, he got frustrated and left the room. I feel like she showed me a bed where she was laying, and she continuously kept spinning. So I guess she was laying looking at the ceiling. She knew that she had to get out of there, but she also was way too drunk and way too dizzy to obtain that goal. And although she thought he may be a little aggressive, she didn't feel like she was in any immediate danger, or at least at this point, she didn't.
That was probably the drugs talking.
Most likely. From what I can see, Mike came back into the room. I believe he also had somebody else there with him. He made some sort of statement to his friend about how this little bitch wouldn't let him get any. I feel like Kanika was making some sort of statement back at him. I feel like Mike was not happy about those statements, and I feel like she was telling him that he had like a small dick or something along those lines.
Of course, trying to intimidate him.
Pretty much. The drugs seemed to be kicking in at this point, and she shows me she wasn't able to get up. She was also looking for a washroom, and instead of looking for a washroom in his room or even the room of the party, I see she decided to go and look for a public washroom. I see the one guy in the hotel that was working there kind of followed along, and so did this Mike guy. I feel like they were also trying to take advantage of her based on what she was wearing, trying to grab her breasts, trying to grab her bottom. I feel like Mike continuously made statements to her like, "I thought you were a yes kind of girl." She was pushing him and kicking him off of her, and she was pretty drugged up. She shows me she wasn't successful, and she remembers a shoe to the head. She remembers being unconscious. She remembers she also came to again, and she did ask them at this point if they can direct her to the friends. The third guy, who she never seen before, was also there at this point. He just kind of appeared out of nowhere. She doesn't know a lot about this one. He was trying to get her to touch him sexually as well. She shows me that they were passing her around to each other, and she kept telling them to let her go. I feel like she started to get really upset, and she got kicked again in the head. I also see something happen with puke in there as well. I think it was connected to her, but she's kind of a little fuzzy on the story. She shows me that at this point she was in a lot of pain, and the last part she remembers alive is this part. She also makes a couple of statements about how she was calling out to her mother and her friends, and she felt like she was screaming pretty loudly, but she says that it may have only been coming out as a whisper. She wants me to identify that one male was white, one male was Hispanic, and the other ethnicity was a mix of some sorts she's not familiar with. She believes they also had some sort of white ethnicity, while something else kind of mixed into that.
Wow, does she remember what happened to her after she had passed on?
Well, when people pass on, it depends on the situation, but normally people do not realize that they've died. However, in this case, it only took a few minutes. She was literally standing over her dead body as they decided to do the next thing. They didn't realize that she had passed for probably a good 5 to 10 minutes. And when they realized it, they all began to panic. Shocker! They knew that she was part of the group of the party, and they knew that there were kids still around. However, they also knew that they didn't have any time to waste. I feel like the person who worked there was the one who made things happen. Not only was that Mike guy pretty belligerently drunk as well, but this employee knew exactly what to do and how to do it, almost as if it happened before.
Conveniently.
Right? She shows me that he got a phone call with somebody else who was also working at the hotel. I guess they were kind of like looking for like, "Hey, where are you? Come back to the front desk," you know? They did not give a lot of details to this other person at the hotel. They just indicated they had found a girl dead. The employee was obviously confused and was also involved, but I guess was too afraid to maybe be blamed for this particular situation from happening. So I think they just went along with it as well. I believe they were trying to figure out a way to tell people they turned off the internet or do something bigger to mess with the surveillance for a period of time so they can at least dispose of the body in a way that they wanted to. I feel like the person that was not involved in the crime, but the person that also worked at the hotel, we'll call him Glenn for now, had found a trolley and some sheets. A roll of garbage bags were also on the trolley, and some spray cleaner and also some paper towel. She shows me that they were trying to come up with methods that would work without her legs falling off the trolley. Unfortunately, every time they tried to move her, the sheet would become unraveled, or her body would just continue to shift, and her body was becoming more and more difficult to maneuver. I feel like they also had a few drops of blood on the floor that was trailing, and also they got a little bit of blood on the sheets too. Not much, just a little. I feel like they ended up taking two garbage bags and putting her inside. They took one garbage bag on one way and then the other garbage bag the other way. They were able to maneuver her slowly on the trolley, and they were able to get the cameras off for a brief period anyway, until they were able to transfer her body. I feel like they initially wanted to put her elsewhere, not necessarily the fridge, but I think they were able to obtain the footage seeing her walking around in this particular area, and so they decided to just go with that. I see that they ran out of time and were cleaning up their mess at the same time. I feel like it happened right before the mother showed up. Like, she was about a 50-minute window from all of this kind of coming to a close.
Wow. Tragic. Right? So tragic.
I feel like the two employees did their best to get the mother to focus on other issues, while this Mike person just went back to the room, grabbed their belongings after a short period of sleep, and then they literally just disappeared. I feel like the hotel manager was also informed of what took place, but also afraid of getting in trouble because there were also activities going on that they shouldn't have been doing. I feel like they let people stay there like their friends, and they just kind of messed around and screwed off a lot. So they were genuinely afraid they were going to get in trouble.
Of course, always. That's usually how it works with people who work at hotels.
And God forbid they come forward and tell anybody the truth. They were all trying to keep them on the down low. They went through the whole denial stage through it all. The footage of her stumbling around in the fridge was about an hour and a half before she was killed, and this being the reason they chose the freezer as her location. She also wanted me to point out her hair was always on point. It never looked messy, even if she was a little drunk. She never let her hair look like crap. Not in public, anyway. She says she would have never done that to herself, that all the hustling and bustling of the garbage bags was the main reason her hair looked like that.
Yeah, it looks like she took care of herself. So I believe that she wouldn't allow herself to look like that.
She is pissed that she had big dreams to get out of this town. She wanted to have a few fun nights before she prepared her life. She wanted babies. She wanted a good job so she could send money to her family when they needed it. She wanted to have a beautiful wedding, and now she gets none of that.
How and why did these police investigators miss all of this?
Believe it or not, this is the part of the story where Kanika is most pissed off about. I may embody her emotions a bit through this. This part of the story she remembers best because as soon as she died and they took her body away, she went right to her mother. Her mother already knew something wasn't right. She was a good girl and her mom felt that she was in danger almost immediately. Her mother's style about how she handled the situation is exactly how I would react if my kid went missing. Her mother went to the front desk and told them her daughter was missing. They treated her like she was crazy and overreacting, telling her to calm down and settle down and to be quiet, that people are sleeping. Now, remember, all of these people are also involved in this situation and already aware. So they were kind of scared to lose their job, so they decided to continue to press this grieving mother.
What sickos, like, just because you don't want to get in trouble.
Exactly. I feel like the manager, maybe they weren't necessarily there yet, but they may have been on a phone call or something along those lines, telling the staff members in the hotel to do absolutely nothing. And unless she started causing a scene, then call the cops on her. Well, her mother asked the staff members if they would contact all the hotel guests to see if they can find her daughter. They rejected her request, like, thank you. She was also on the phone with somebody while screaming at the staff members, which I totally get why. The people in the hotel weren't aware of the situation, so they just kept telling her to calm down. So I guess that would be all the people that were kind of lingering around. Her mom was on a rampage. She decided to go right away. Like, and this is like around 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, and started pounding on the doors and waking up sleeping babies, and people were pissed. Started calling and visiting the front desk about the abruptness of the knocking and scaring everybody. People are more concerned about their sleep than somebody missing. The person in charge of the hotel, which I believe is the same person on the phone earlier, decided to call the police on this woman.
Like, I know they were aware of the situation, but why wouldn't they just try at least to help her in some sort of way? Like, instead of making it into some big fight, I would have helped her knock on the rest of the 502 doors. If she came to my door, that's, you know, someone's missing child.
Exactly.
So what happened with the police?
Well, a lot like the people at the hotel took that same kind of approach. They did not believe this girl was missing. They thought it was just an overreacting mother and a teenager drunk somewhere. They took very small and slow steps towards looking for her. They were more interested in how the mother was reacting than anything else. The police talked to the staff and told them that she was batshit crazy, and the police also made a snap judgment about her. They did not check rooms, guests, everyone that had been to the party. Most of them had already left. They checked with a few kids that they asked around, not really getting a lot of detail. There was really not a lot going on here. They checked the cameras and the exits to prove she left. I believe when they finally looked at the video surveillance of the doors, they finally realized that she hadn't left. So they started to worry. Found the images of her straggling around the fridge and checked it. They were surprised at what they found.
They were hoping that they were going to find her alive and just sleeping it off?
Pretty much. The police did not feel like there was anyone connected to this in any way. They also informed the medical examiner of their findings as well. I see that the MD and the police had a conversation. I feel like the MD was also very lazy, and Kanika suggested that there was some major racial profiling going on here, and that the MD did not look thoroughly enough, and that everyone else seemed to just be trying to cover this shit up. Kanika shows me that this situation is just dealt with in this manner. She said this isn't the first and sadly will not be the last. But the more this is put out there into the world, the more pressure put onto the good elites to make genuine differences. She makes that statement passionately.
Will anything come of this case?
Yes, but it's not enough, at least not at this point. People that were involved will drop anonymous tips, afraid to come forward, afraid to get in trouble, and I don't blame them by any means. It is scary, especially when it comes to characters' positions in the situation. But when it comes to standing up against the grain, if you are someone who is involved or you know someone who's involved, because there are so many people that know things that were said through other people, they're not necessarily sharing, it will be okay to come forward. If you do it, it will start a revolution, and it will be kind of like a trifecta of people that are not afraid to come forward anymore. Evolving and coming forward, and we can kind of shed some light on some more cases like Kanika Jenkins. So share this podcast to as many people as possible so that all the right people can hear it.
Absolutely. Is there any other details?
Kanika wanted me to tell everyone that she appreciates all the love and support she gets from all of the people out there watching out for her. There are still so many people to this day that are still trying to solve this case and helping try to figure out every single possible detail. Everyone is sharing photos from her when she was young, and that makes her happy. She loves that everyone remembers. She says there's been so many nice comments, and you're damn right that she's been spending some time on social media checking up on things.
Wow, that's awesome. So on a lighter note, a lot of people ask you about Indigo Kids. I know I was one and you were also one, but we didn't really understand it. Maybe you could explain a little bit of the details of what an Indigo Kid is.
Sure. Kids and animals and even some adults that are near death have abilities. They'll be able to be sensitive to spirits or visions of the future, past, or even the present. Kids are super sensitive already to spiritual activity, but with Indigo Kids, it's a little bit more in depth. They may give you more detail. They may know things about people that have passed on. They may tell you stories about things that happened in their past life. I've had a few interactions with some kids that knew all about themselves before they lived, and it's been a pretty crazy phenomenon.
Wow, that's crazy.
Right? Most of the kids lose that knowledge, but the ones that do may end up having this gift with them through the rest of their life.
Well, that's cool.
Exactly. Indigo kids can see things pretty strongly. They see vivid visions or are able to figure out who's talking to them. Some have no fear and some have major fear. So when it comes to speaking with your kids about visions, I would recommend to let the kids talk and tell you what they see, and then reassure them that they're not bad if the kids are afraid.
Best advice.
My family was very Catholic, and my grandma was also somebody who saw visions. But because she saw visions, it didn't necessarily go with the Catholic religion. However, the Portuguese religion believed in a lot of vision stuff. So when she moved to Canada, it was pretty conflicting for her. I don't necessarily know if my grandma was able to send spirits, but I do know she was able to predict future events. So I came from a psychic lineage, and I'm not sure exactly who in my family had the abilities. Maybe one day I'll look into that and figure out my past. I also thought I would pass on my abilities to my only child. I came from a huge family. My grandmother gave birth to 9 kids, 5 boys, 4 girls. My grandmother lost one daughter, unfortunately. She died only a few days after birth. So I come from a huge family.
Huge, huge family.
My daughter also had just one moment when she was about 2.5 years old. I was going to a trip to the U.S., technically Miami, actually. And I was with an ex of mine, and I was telling my daughter that I was going on a plane for a week. She started to laugh. She was sitting behind me in a car seat, so I looked back at her. The plane go down. She kept mimicking a plane crashing with an explosion, and I was like, oh my God. I was so alarmed, I said no. She started to laugh again and say yes. Of course, I was afraid to go on the plane, but I did it anyway because I was 21. And this was one in a lifetime opportunity.
I don't think I would be going on that plane if they said it was going to crash.
Well, we got to our destination, turned on the TV, and seen the exact same airport I had come from, and there had been a plane missing the landing and ended up in a forest area and crashed. No one died, thank God, but that was Selena's first and last vision.
Wow. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us today. Just a reminder that we will also have an exclusive episode only on Podbean in relation to Summer Wells.
Woohoo!
And you are not going to want to miss this. Your donation will help us to be able to obtain our goal of being able to travel across country and be more involved in these cases than we are now. So thanks for joining, guys. Bye.
Bye.